This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Howdy, everybody. We are back. Dang. A little blast in the earphones for you. We're back. It's been a couple days since we've been on. I went down to the Rose Bowl in Pasadena and embarked on a journey that, curiously, the most interesting portion of it was the geological, going from Malibu, California, Los Angeles, California, Pasadena, California, to the desert, seeing how fast everything changes. Why am I focused on that kind of stuff? Well, if you saw the Rose Bowl, you'll know that that was far from the most interesting part of my Rose Bowl trip. Alabama absolutely trounced. And really, I think the main subject of this today's show is going to be how Alabama has represented and really carried the SEC on its back for so long, and now the dynasty is officially dead. Alabama fans are in absolute shambles. If you listen to any radio call-in shows, some of these old style talk radio, Paul Feinbaum, if you listen to any of these shows the last couple days after that Rose Bowl game, you'll hear exactly what I'm talking about. It's exactly why I would like to add a call-in line to our show. Alabama, worst loss, worst postseason loss by margin in program history. I was watching it from the Alabama sideline, and at no point, I'll tell you guys a little secret here, I had a hotel credit, and tickets to the game, the Alabama-Indiana Rose Bowl game, they were not expensive at all. They were like $130 for some sideline tickets. I imagine the reason for that is that Pasadena, California is so far away from Tuscaloosa and from Bloomington. You couldn't tell the fans apart from each other in the stadium because they both had crimson as their main color, as many college football fans know. So you couldn't tell really from a distance who was an Alabama fan, who was an Indiana fan, except for when the team made plays. And I'll let you guys in on a secret. Alabama didn't make any plays. So it was almost like Alabama fans were not there. I know they were. They just had nothing to cheer about. 38-3. And you knew late in the game, I can't remember if it was late third quarter or early fourth quarter in the Rose Bowl, that Kalen DeBoer, down at least 35 from what I remember, kicks a field goal to avoid the shutout. Austin Mack, the backup quarterback for Alabama, came into the game at some point. And as we were sitting up in the stands, we thought Ty Simpson, I was sitting with some Alabama fans, we thought Ty Simpson just got benched. Now, it was reported he ended up being hurt. Austin Mack comes in, number 10 for Alabama, and actually brought the most spark you saw from that Alabama team all day. You could tell from the jump, the way these guys were coming off the sideline, there's no energy. No energy. And it's got a lot of Alabama fans calling for Kalen DeBoer's job. The same Alabama fans that were revering that they had a coach like Kalen DeBoer that could lead such a gritty comeback down 17 on the road in the first round of the playoff against Oklahoma. We all now know that Oklahoma didn't belong in the playoff. Alabama didn't belong in the playoff. And this is actually, based on the narrative of the show, completely contrary to any of my takes. I think Alabama did get a little bit of psychological preferential treatment from the playoff committee based on their past achievements. Watching that Rose Bowl game on New Year's Day, especially, forgot what I was going to say. Watching that Rose Bowl game on New Year's Day and seeing how this team performed and knowing they came back against Oklahoma like that, we now know that Alabama didn't belong in the playoff, let alone Oklahoma. And a lot of media folks today, a lot of media folks on Friday. I'm sorry we didn't have a show on Friday, by the way. I was coming back from Southern California. A lot of people in the media today are saying that Alabama fans need to move past the Nick Saban era. Media pundits are implying that Alabama fans have not moved on from the Saban era. I'm not an Alabama fan, but I feel like I've heard enough from them. I know enough of them to know that they have moved on. In fact, I feel like a couple of funerals for the program went on the day that Nick Saban walked out for the last time. Okay. He's still got an office at the stadium. Fields named after Nick Saban in Tuscaloosa. He's still got an office down there. Bama actually pays him, from what I understand, $500,000 a year and gives him an office. But it's clear, based on what I hear from a lot of different people, that he's not doing much for that $500,000. Why would he? Does a great job on game day, having a lot of fun in the media, and he's obviously contributed everything he could to that building and that community. Right? So I'm not dumping on Nick Saban for not doing anything for that $500,000 a year. He earned it. But you look at the style of, you look at the way Alabama played. You look at the way that the state of their run game. Okay. Alabama this offseason hired their offensive coordinator, Ryan Grubb, who the Seattle Seahawks at the end of last NFL season let go because they didn't have a run game. Comes in Alabama, and it's literally the same story. No run game. I think, so they obviously get their ass kicked two out of the last three games of their season, Alabama. 28-7, they lose to Georgia, and the score of that game really doesn't indicate how bad Alabama really got their ass kicked in that game. And then this 38-3 loss to Indiana, in both games, Alabama totaled somewhere in the area of 23 rushing yards. I think if you add that third game in, I can't remember, Oklahoma, they had maybe 40-something yards. Maybe not even. The run game is an essential part of all those successful Nick Saban dynasty era teams. Nick Saban always said, if we lose, we're not going to lose because we couldn't run the ball. Where does that start? In the trenches. And Alabama, with the Saban discount, that's what they call it in recruiting, the Saban discount, you get NIL talent for cheaper than you might get them elsewhere because you got Saban coaching you and developing you. Not anymore. That Saban discount is gone. But Alabama still had the recruiting clout, had it. I don't know if they're going to have it anymore after that Rose Bowl. I really think it was the death of Alabama, and I think the death of Alabama kind of represents that whole entire SEC, at least for now. We'll get to Ole Miss. And what a game that was. We'll get to Georgia. But Georgia fans are feeling a lot different. And if you watched any parts of any of these games, you'll know what I'm talking about. Georgia fans feel exponentially different in the wake of all this than do Alabama fans. Alabama fans are pissed. They are absolutely to the gills. They wanna put Kalen DeBoer in an airplane to Seattle. And 10 minutes from town, they want to give him a parachute so that he can skydive out of that plane and land somewhere in the general Seattle area. That's how pissed Alabama fans are. They've never experienced anything like this. There's a lot of talk about the calendar. A couple of folks have proposed new calendars. One of them's Dan Lanning, the Oregon head coach. And listen, I like Dan Lanning. From what I've heard from him, I like him a lot. I've watched Oregon this season sparingly. They just don't interest me for whatever reason. I don't know what it is. They're not very physical. They beat the hell out of Texas Tech. Speaking of another team that didn't deserve to make it, I think Vandy had a probably better team than Texas Tech. Texas probably had a better team than Texas Tech. And obviously, Vanderbilt and Texas did give Alabama a run for their money. You got to look at Alabama now with consecutive four loss seasons. You got to look at Alabama now more like an Illinois. More like an Iowa. That's how you got to look at Alabama now. And Bama fans won't like hearing that. But the sooner you accept the reality that we are in a new era of college football and that it's going to be very, very unpredictable. It's going to be very cyclical. It's going to be NFL levels of hard to sustain any semblance of a multi-year dynasty. I think Kirby might be one of the last guys to repeat as a head coach of a program for a long time. So, I mean, when you look at four lost programs, four lost teams, that's what Alabama's been. And they got to make changes, man. They got to make changes. Unlike my Cincinnati Bengals, we got to have some serious conversations around Alabama football. Some of the fans want Ryan Grubb gone. A lot of them want Kalen DeBoer gone. I don't know if Kalen DeBoer has as much control as everybody thinks. But like it or not, Alabama is not going to make a coaching change. They've picked their guy. They're rolling with their guy. I think their fans are just hurt right now because they've never been in a spot like this. They've never been humiliated in front of a national audience like this by a good Indiana team. But I think a lot of folks' perception, the preconceived notion is, well, how the hell do we let French Lick Indiana beat us by 35 points? I think that's the headspace that Alabama fans are in right now. And it's understandable. It's understandable. You have a standard. You have the greatest head coach of all time at any level, in my opinion, there for a long time. You're probably looking at a hangover similar to what Kentucky basketball had pre-Cal. And the thing about that was is Kentucky only won one championship. Alabama's won six or seven. So Indiana's got a good team. Indiana is a lot like, if you ever played AAU basketball, Indiana's a lot like that all-white team that they're warming up and they don't look too intimidating or anything, and you're kind of thinking, oh, yeah, like, I'm going to elbow these cats down low. I'm going to shove them out, rebound on them. And then they come out there and the execution is just crisp. It's that all-white AAU team that's just moving the ball five, six, seven times possession. They're moving it around. They're finding open threes. They're technically sound. They're consistent. They're reliable. That's Indiana. They got a hell of a back, number one. I can't remember his name, Roman or something. And Mendoza, obviously. Say what you want about him. He's kind of weird. I can imagine he's a really weird guy. He's probably a great roommate. You know, it's probably like he's probably a great suite mate, you know, in a college dorm. He cleans the sink for you and you know, when he takes a crap, he flushes it right away so he doesn't smell up the bathroom. You know, he asks you whether you want to use the shower first. And he'll defer to you and wait for you to shower. That's Fernando Mendoza. You know, I think he'd be in a dorm, sweet mate of the year. He's a nice guy, you know. Do I think he's going to have much success in the NFL? He doesn't look the part to me. I think somebody like Trinidad Chambliss has a much better chance of finding a place in the NFL. And you can say what you want about Trinidad's style of play, too. The way he moved around against the most physical defense in the land, Georgia, that Sugar Bowl was something else, wasn't it, man? It was one of the best games I've seen in the last decade for sure. And I will say I'm biased. I love Ole Miss. I got a lot of family that went there. If I was good enough to play there, I would have gone there and played there, but I wasn't good enough. The Trinidad Chambliss, man, he showed you something that I don't think you've seen all year. I don't think you've seen anything close this season to a quarterback's individual performance quite like Trinidad Chambliss put up in the Sugar Bowl against the most physical team in all the land, Georgia. You know, Kirby was talking about it going into the fourth quarter. We got to play bully ball. We got to out-physical them. And Pete Golding's guys, man, look, the X factor for this Ole Miss team going forward is their defensive front. These guys were absolutely hooping against Georgia. Absolutely balling against Georgia. I mean, it was something to watch as a football guy where you get a little blood flowing down south. When you see that trench work, being put down like Ole Miss put it down. You had Eagles, who's a Mississippi boy. I hope I said his name right. Eagles, number 52, 53, batted down four or five balls. They had violent hands. They were refusing to be blocked, especially on the run. And they had so many moments of adversity like that fumble by Kawan Lacy going into the half. Number six for UGA ends up taking it to the house. Ole Miss is down 9 at half. And you're sitting there wondering, damn, is this going to be a blowout? Is this going to be, like, is Georgia really going to beat the piss out of these boys? Ended up being the reverse of what happened in the first meeting between Ole Miss and Georgia. Ole Miss, during the regular season, was up 9 points going into halftime in Athens. And Georgia ended up flipping the game, coming home with the win. The reverse happened in the Sugar Bowl. It was crazy. You know, Ole Miss went for it on fourth down a time or two and got stuffed. They give up a defensive touchdown, and they still managed to find a way to win. Obviously, the lazy take, the obvious take, is that Trinidad Chambliss took over that game. I think the ball knower take of the day is knowing that what won Ole Miss the Sugar Bowl, the unit that won them the Sugar Bowl, and the unit that's going to take them to places this program has never been before. You got to beat Miami, probably got to beat presumably Indiana in the national championship. It's going to rely on the Ole Miss defensive line. These guys are absolute ballers, and they bullied the bully in college football. That's a cornerstone of Kirby Smart teams, is physicality. You've heard Kirby talk about it all year long, physicality. And they were physical against Ole Miss. They played well. And that's why you're hearing Georgia fans not even close to as mad. It's the second year in a row that Georgia has not won a college football playoff game. They've gotten a bye both years. Both years they've gotten a bye. They lose to Notre Dame in the quarterfinal last year after Carson Beck went down, and they threw Gunnar Stockton into the fire, which I think really helped Gunnar Stockton. What a gutsy performance by that kid. There were 3 or 4 hits that got laid on Gunnar Stockton in the Sugar Bowl where you damn sure thought that he wasn't going to get up. And one of them, he's rolling left. He throws it the last second, gets absolutely tattooed, completes it. And then the next play or two after that, he's QB sneaking into the end zone and celebrating with his teammates. Kids different. You don't see many kids that are able to take that kind of contact these days. It seemed like all of my grievances about football, about it not being as physical, about the refs ticky-tacking big hits and stuff like that these days, they let the boys play in that damn Sugar Bowl, and it was a beautiful sight to watch. Because a lot of times, that hit on Gunnar Stockton where he's rolling left and he unloads it the last second, gets absolutely tattooed. I guarantee you there's NFL games, hell, maybe some college games, where they hit that defensive guy for targeting, where you penalize a defensive guy for playing physical football. It was definitely a let the boys play kind of game. And some people complained about certain aspects of the refereeing. The referees were completely out of it at the end of the game. If you guys watch the end of the Sugar Bowl, you know what I'm talking about. They literally had the stage rolled out onto the field, and then they say, we got a meaningless 1 second left that we're going to leave on the clock and play it. And then Georgia ended up getting it back and actually having a chance, having one play to lateral and try and win the game. It was excruciating. It was pointless. But the refs definitely, it was kind of a shit show there at the end. A lot of people were dumping on the refs, though, throughout the course of the game, saying they missed calls. They didn't miss a bad face mask call on Kawan Lacey at one point. It was bad, and the line judge was right there, just missed it, you know. But I'm going to give a hot take about the refs in the Sugar Bowl and say I liked the job they did. They let the boys play. Couple of bad ones slipped in there. A bad face mask slipped in there. I'm pretty sure there was a questionable pass interference call in the Sugar Bowl. I can't remember who was involved. But those couple of blatantly bad calls or no calls aside, my hot take is that I liked the job, end of game aside, that the refs did in the Sugar Bowl. The end of the game was a disaster. Completely excruciating for Ole Miss fans. And Ole Miss fans, man, let me tell you, they packed it. They traveled, man. And I'm pretty sure they're traveling this weekend to Phoenix. I know a couple of groups of people that are coming to see me in Phoenix to watch Ole Miss play against the Miami Hurricanes in the Fiesta Bowl. I'm fired up about that game. That game is who I hope ends up, the winner of it is who I hope ends up being a national champion. I think Miami's badass. I love Cristobal. I love the way he plays. You know, I heard that a couple weeks ago after Miami lost on the road to SMU that some Miami fans wanted Cristobal fired. And isn't it funny? This has been a narrative going around. It's not really a narrative. It's a fact. All four coaches remaining in the playoff are disciples of Nick Saban. Cristobal worked for him. Cignetti worked for him. Dan Lanning worked for him. Pete Golding worked for him. And it's funny, man. I just think it's really funny. After that Bama comeback against Oklahoma, everyone's high on Bama. I was high on him, man. I took him. I told y'all on the show, during that first round of the playoff when Bama was playing Oklahoma, I took Bama on a money line. It was the luckiest thing I'll ever hit in my life, probably. Plus 750, I took Alabama money line for $50. And I rode that into the Rose Bowl. I rode it, man, because my ticket was $134. I had a hotel credit. And so I put down a bet on Alabama money line. I'm throwing myself under the bus right now. I took Alabama against Indiana. I wanted to pay for my trip, so I took $126 Alabama money line. What a waste. But a boy can only dream. I'm sweating. I'm hot as hell right now, boy. Damn, we 30 minutes in. King asks me, Bills versus Jags, who you got? Dude, I was listening to The Herd this morning. I was listening to Colin Coward's program. And it seems like a lot of the media folks like Jacksonville against Buffalo. I don't know how I feel about it. I haven't watched much of Jacksonville, but they seem like they're rolling. It seems like everyone's high on them. You know, you see that locker room shot of the guys giving Trevor Lawrence his first pair of grills. I don't know if that's going to give Trevor Lawrence some extra superpowers going into this wild card round, but you got the Panthers and the Rams in Charlotte on Saturday, I believe. And you got the Bears and the Packers. I think Green Bay's traveling to Chicago. Chicago are underdogs at home to Green Bay, Green Bay hadn't won in a month. Think about that. And then you got a 10.5 point spread apparently in the Panthers Rams game. I think it's pretty obvious that the Rams will win that. Other than that, I wouldn't be surprised at any single outcome that happens this NFL wild card weekend. What a game between the Ravens and the Steelers last night. Comes down to a rookie kicker. Can't remember where the kid went. I don't know if it would have been any different if Justin Tucker could have kept it in his pants and stuck around at Baltimore. But I do know that He ends up missing the kick. The Steelers sideline, as Baltimore was lining up to kick, looked absolutely dejected. And then, obviously, kid misses it. 44-yarder. There was no wind last night in Pittsburgh. None. It was pretty chilly. So, hitting the ball might have been hard. Hitting the ball solid might have been hard. Chris Boswell missed an extra point before that. It's the first time he had missed an extra point in 4 years. And what a moment that miss came at. Wasn't even close. Chris Boswell, one of the best kickers in the NFL, I think he hit from 55 earlier in the game, if I'm not mistaken. And he misses a huge field goal, extra point. Extra point would have put him up 27-24, kept him safe from a field goal. Instead, it becomes 26-24, and that gives Baltimore the chance to drive down, which they did, and have that chance at that 44-yard field goal. They miss. But what stood out to me was right the play before Baltimore kicked it for the win last night was that they just snapped it to Lamar, and he goes backwards and over for a second, you know, just centering the ball. And I remember thinking in the moment, you got arguably the best running back in the game, the most physical running back in the game. Why would you not hand it off to him? They had time. They had timeouts. Why would you not hand it off to him, give him a chance to, you know, if he picks up 5 or 6, you're looking at a 38-yarder. Instead of a 44-yarder. God forbid he picks up 10. Then you're looking at a chip shot with no extra risk. So I didn't understand that at all, that Baltimore just chose to center the football instead of hand it off to fucking Derrick Henry. Don't know if it would have made a difference. Maybe he misses from 38. Maybe he misses from 34. He's a rookie. The moment might have been too big for him. But it certainly would have taken some heat off of him. I don't know what you're thinking if you're John Harbaugh. It is Black Monday. I didn't expect to talk about much pro football today because I had a lot to say about what's going on in college football. But it is Black Monday. 6 head coaching jobs will be open as of now in the NFL. Most recently, the Cardinals fired Jonathan Gannon. The Browns fired Kevin Stefanski this morning. The Titans' job is obviously open. The Raiders fired Pete Carroll this morning. And the New York Giants' head coaching job will also be open. Was that 6? I think I listed off all of them. Listen, man, I think Kevin Stefanski's the only hireable coach in the lot of coaches that got fired. I don't think Jonathan Gannon will be a head coach again. I don't think Pete Carroll will be a head coach again. I think Pete Carroll, as respected as he is throughout football, he'll land as an advisor for someone. But I think you'll see Kevin Stefanski be a prime, at least based on what's happened to this moment. I think you'll see Kevin Stefanski is the number one candidate in this pool right now in the NFL. Two-time coach of the year. Got the Browns to the playoffs multiple occasions. And I'm kind of sitting here wishing that Cincinnati would get out of their own way and just hire Kevin Stefanski. Just do something. Mike Brown, man, I'm struggling to even want to cover. Look at my hair. I'm struggling to even want to cover the Cincinnati Bengals. I think you really are. Until the Bengals get their shit together, guys, I really do think you're going to hear more college football oriented subject matter on this show. We won't stay away from the NFL. We're still friends with the NFL, but it's a lot harder when your favorite, it's really hard when your favorite team is the Cincinnati Bengals. Mike Brown wrote a letter to the fan base this morning. I wasn't even expecting that. Of course, they didn't apologize. They just said that we had high expectations and that, you know, we're frustrated. But the Bengals are officially rolling with Zach and Duke for the 2026 season. They're running it back. And, oh, Atlanta fired their head coach as well. That was the most shocking one to me. Atlanta, especially as hot as Atlanta got at the end of the year, playing for nothing. A lot of times, to me, when there's nothing on the line and a team plays like the Falcons have been playing the last 3 weeks, that means that they're behind their coach and that their coach is doing something right. I was shocked that Atlanta fired Raheem Morris today. Absolutely bewildered. He should be a head coaching candidate as well. He and Stefanski, I think, are the two most hireable fired head coaches in this coaching cycle. I would be so fired up if the Bengals brought on Raheem Morris. I would be so fired up if the Bengals brought on Kevin Stefanski. But alas, they are running it back with Zach Taylor and Duke Tobin. And I think it's very obvious that Zach Taylor is very comfortable in his job. He's very comfortable, and a nice piece of wisdom that my college head coach Chris Hatcher would always share with us is that you have to have a healthy fear for your job day in and day out. And I don't think that Zach Taylor has any semblance of fear for his job. I think he knows the ownership well. I think he understands deeply how they operate. How couldn't he? And that's why against the Browns yesterday, you have a 4th-and-1 at midfield in the fourth quarter with the game on the line, and you punt it. It's just a scared little puss. I shouldn't talk like that on here, but that's what Zach Taylor is, and not scared in the way you want him to be. Scared about minuscule things like turning the ball over on downs at midfield in a competitive game. Here we are getting on the Bengals. Like I said, I think this organization is so dysfunctional that Joe Burrow is going to end up asking out. I truly believe that. You could see it in his eyes. You could see it on his face that he's broken down. The Bengals have broken him down just like they broke Carson Palmer down. And they're tarnishing his career. They're leaving a stain on what could be a Hall of Fame career for Joe Burrow. The Bengals are a stain on the history books throughout history. You know, I heard Alabama fans calling into Paul Feinbaum saying that this 35-point loss to Indiana is a stain on our program's history. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, you know, if you're comparing a pro team to a college team in terms of legacy, like, how does Cincinnati stack up to that? Like, is every game is a stain for Cincinnati, and they make no change. Rhymed. So, you'll see something change in Cincinnati at the end of next year. I don't know what it's going to be. And I talked about this ad nauseum on here as well. If the Bengals ever stumble upon a nut again as a blind squirrel, does that just reinforce their dysfunctional workflow for the next 5 years, for the next 10 years, like it has this past 5 years? Because in that letter that Mike Brown wrote this morning saying that they were keeping Zach and keeping Tobin, the reasoning behind it is that we've been to two AFC championships, we've been to a Super Bowl. We ain't been to an AFC championship in almost half a decade, Mike. You know what I call that? I wish I had a hat sitting around at this table. I call that hanging your hat. Just like the egos of the Brown family continue to be as big as they are with no merit, they're hanging their hat on the achievements of the past. They are stuck in the past. So I almost worry that it's bad for the Bengals organization to win. Because it's like that same psychological phenomenon when you're kind of a half-assed student in school like I was. You know what I would do? I'd study hard to get an A+ on a test or the first test or whatever. And then for the next 3 or 4 tests, you know what I'd do? I'd coast. C's. And then you're at a B average. That's enough for a degree. You see what I'm saying? It's called resting on your laurels. It's the exact psychological phenomenon, the exact line of thinking that Nick Saban preached against to his Alabama teams. Resting on your laurels. And that is, in a nutshell, the Cincinnati Bengals. That's my rant today about the Bengals. And again, like, I'm pretty much there where I'm done giving this organization any attention. It's going to be nice not having Bengal football to annoy me on Sundays for the next until September. And then we'll reassess, we'll reevaluate. Stuff will come up on them, I'm sure. I'm not saying I'll never talk about the Bengals again on this show, but are they really worth my oxygen right now? I don't think any rational football fan would say that they're worth my breath right now. You had 3 or 4 teams, maybe, you know, you had to, yeah, I mean, I was about to make a take that was ill-informed. The Falcons were better than the Bengals this year. Raheem Morris is a far better coach to me than Zach Taylor, and the Falcons let Raheem Morris go. You got to have forward thinking. You can't be stuck in the past like the Bengals ownership is. Why is Indiana successful in football for the first time ever? It's because their coach, Cignetti, showed up on campus and sensed that everyone was down. They had old offices from the 80s. Nobody's taking it seriously. And he comes into Indiana and shakes everybody and says, wake up. Wake up. We can win too. Everybody else was anchored in the past. Kurt Cignetti was interested in moving forward. And that's why you've seen Indiana's rise be so meteoric and quick in college football. And I think that's going to be the nature of it. I think you're going to have schools that pop up year in and year out until they get this whole thing figured out. I think that's going to be the state of college football. More on all this tomorrow. If you're new here, thanks for popping in. We hope you enjoy the show. We hope that you like the video and subscribe to the channel. Check us out on Spotify, Amazon Music, anywhere that's an audio platform where you can get podcasts. We are there. Go leave us a review. Follow us. Do whatever you got to do to support the show. We really hope you enjoy. We're going to continue to cover these things day in and day out. We're live 6 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday on YouTube. Kick. And you can see all episodes retroactively as well on YouTube. For now, the show is vertical. So whenever you watch a YouTube replay, it'll be vertical. It's best watched on your phone. And the reason we stream vertical is so that we can reach new fans, new audience members in the live chat. I'm looking at adding call-ins to the show. I think that would be a really fun segment of the show. So let me know if you guys would like to hear call-ins as well. I don't really care either way because I think I'm going to do them. But that's my spiel. That's all for today, guys. Let me know if there's anything we missed today that you want us to talk about. But we'll continue to monitor the college football situation, the state of the SEC. I think the days of the SEC being a dominant conference might be over for now. Ole Miss, our only hope for the SEC. And, you know, I think Ole Miss can do it. I think this is the first playoff in a long time where literally any team in the field of four could do it. Ole Miss got to play physical. It's going to be on their D-line. Hope you guys enjoyed. I'm going to go get ready for jiu-jitsu. And see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you.